What's up, everybody? Welcome once again to another episode of Blockbuster Mentality. I'm your host, Ben. Got another great show for you folks today. But first, before we get started, as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube, anywhere you listen. Give us reviews, rate us. It helps us out a lot, believe it or not. As I said, we have a great show in just a couple minutes here. We invite comedians Kevin Israel and Kevin Goatee on the show. Not only are they comedians, but they are also hosts of the podcast Gutting the Sacred Cow, which they were gracious enough to have us on as we discuss Ghostbusters on that episode. Their podcast is they have on a guest who tries to destroy a beloved film, and it's quite fun. And hey, Ghostbusters isn't that great, people. And hey, I think we convinced them. So listen to that episode. Today we have them on to talk about, and not destroy or anything, but to talk about the great film Terminator 2 Judgment Day, obviously starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Linda Hamilton, directed by James Cameron. Have a great conversation about it. And my last episode, I talked to Greg Fitzsimmons about editing, and he's right. I'm going to keep my mess ups in there. You know, I stutter a lot. That's who I am. You know, should I have a podcast if I stutter and, you know, misplace words here and there and my mind goes blank? Sure. Why not? And if the guest, you know, wants me to take out something, I will. But hey, I have a life to live. I want the podcast to sound great, but hey, you know, editing takes a lot of time. I'm going to edit this clip in at the beginning. I'm going to put music and all that, but to edit out all the ums and the uhs, it's like, it's natural, you know, it's natural. All right. But so, you know, if you hear that in this episode, it is what it is. All right. It is what it is. So hope you enjoy it anyways. So that is it. Oh, and also can't believe I didn't mention this. Dave is back. Dave is back for this episode anyways. Dave, my precious, beautiful Dave, he joins me for this episode, and he joined me for the Ghostbusters episode on their show as well. But anywho, enough of the chit-chat. Here is our conversation on T2 Judgment Day with Kevin Goatee and Kevin Israel, the guys from Gutting the Sacred Cow. Enjoy. How long have you guys known each other?
Good question. Kevin, what is that answer? I mean, we've known each other.
I actually remember the first time we met.
Oh, I know it too. Yeah, it was Rich McDonald's roast.
Yeah. I don't remember when that was, though. Probably 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe even more. But, I mean, Kev and I are both stand-up comics, and the stand-up comedy world is oddly very small and very large at the same time. It's a weird amorphous entity, but we always just kept crossing paths, and we're friends with a lot of the same people. He, you know, we're both in Jersey. We did the New York, New Jersey scene. So on social media, we kept crossing, and Kevin and I both talked a lot about movies and movie stuff. And we'd always go back and forth about whether we agree or disagree with whatever crazy assertions one of us made. And then Kev came up with this idea for this podcast, and he posted looking for a co-host. And I happened to be in the market for a podcast, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And he called me. I posted it. I hit like send, and he called me like 3 minutes later and was like, let's do it. And it's been, I mean, the idea of the podcast is brilliant. And it's, you know, it's just something so different. And I think people really enjoy they enjoy enjoying it, or they enjoy hating it. Either way,
did you guys start this post COVID?
No, this was October 2019.
Oh, okay, so like right before, kind of yeah, a few months before. At that roast is when you met each other, and then you just kind of were just kind of acquaintances, and then the podcast came, and then it was like, okay, we're in it now.
We're married.
Yeah.
Very true.
That's what awesome. What kind of weird stuff have you seen? A lot of people think they're funny, and I know that maybe stand-up comedy might attract a different kind of person. You guys seem fairly well adjusted. But what kind of stuff have you guys seen over the years? The characters that have kind of come in and out of the scene?
I will tell you right fucking now that we are by far and away anomalies. And why? Because we can look people in the eye and have conversations and not talk about being on meds. No, we're not autistic. That's another big thing too. And no, our parents aren't floating us money to rent apartments in Bed-Stuy and or Williamsburg. So and I'm serious because we're one of the few people that have corporate America day jobs. And we know how business works. So we know that this just doesn't happen on a fucking wink and a prayer. You know, there's hard work in it, which is why one of the reasons I chose Kevin Israel to be my podcast host, because you guys fucking know that this shit is hard. It's not just, we'll throw it to the wall and we'll see if it sticks. Nope. Like I don't know how many hours we're each devoting to this fucking podcast. And I knew he would definitely put his fair share and then some in. But yeah, we are by far the anomalies. And it's so funny because guys and girls like us all flock together. And when they're also, I also came up with this, there are doers and there are talkers. We are doers, and 90-ish% of everybody else are fucking talkers, and we can sniff you out in a minute or less, which you are.
Yeah. The stand-up comedy attracts a variety of people, a lot of times those people fit into specific like phylums. Like you have the very socially awkward people who can only interact through a microphone, and then the minute they get off stage they just shut down. And then you have the people who are like angry at the world and they get it out by being on stage, but they actually are that angry inside and they can't express it any other way than by being on stage. It's a lot of like, I need to talk about my problems on stage.
This is my therapy is the fucking line that sends us into a tizzy.
Right. But I'm putting a comedic spin on it. So, you know, it makes it seem a little hidden, you know, you guys are based obviously in New Jersey. I mean, have you guys ever tried to go out to LA or is that in the works? Like what are your thoughts on people who go to LA for this kind of stuff?
I have done work outside the tri-state area. Vegas I've done several times. I've done stuff in Florida, but not crazy. My thing with LA is I don't know why some people, unless you're into acting, you don't go to LA for comedy. You go to LA for pilot season or TVs or movies or shit like that. You come to New York for comedy. You go to LA for acting. And I'm not going to LA until LA's knocking my fucking door down going, we're buying your shows. Cause I've developed a few TV shows. We're buying your shows. You need to be here. Then I will go. And I don't want to listen the way California is right now of insane taxes, the insane homeless people, the insane whatever the fuck else is going on out there. Like, I don't want to go unless it's absolutely 100% fucking mandatory. So that was usually what everyone thought is, oh, I'm going to go make it in New York, which make it in New York. You need to. That is by far and away the tallest order known to man is making it in New York. And
if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere.
Someone said that. I forgot who. Yeah. Just a guy from around the corner in Hoboken sung that.
Yeah, it was a guy who made it.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's who said it.
It's true. I've done some work on the road around the country. I've done a series of shows in Michigan. I've done out Midwest, out down south, up north. It's fun. I hate traveling just as a person. Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm going on vacations nice, but I don't like traveling for work or traveling for travel's sake. I hate staying in hotels. I hate flying. I just hate the whole process of it.
100%.
I'm such a homebody. So to me, like, being able to stay in the tri-state area and perform and do this is optimal for me. I've never had any desire to go out to California, and people always, my wife has a bunch of friends out in California and they're like, oh, if you come out, you know, we know people at clubs and stuff. And I'm like, the thing with comedy is your chance of making it in comedy as far as like, that's how you suddenly cross over is so slim and infinitesimal and has nothing to do with how funny you are or how much time you put in. It has to do with, on the right night at the right time, the right person happens to be there and happens to be looking for someone who says you know, butt face the way you say butt face. And he goes, oh, I'm going to do something with you. But if those elements all don't come together, you're never going to make it that way. So yeah. like we comics are always looking for like stuff like this, like podcasts or YouTube. Sure. Like there's, you've got to have these other things happening. And it was also something I was never interested in doing. Like I never wanted to be a YouTuber. I never wanted to be like, I didn't want to do a podcast unless I've done a bunch of podcasts, but I never got into it. I love this concept. I love working with Kevin. I love movies. So this is fun, but comedy is a very strange animal, especially now.
Oh, I'm sure.
And, yeah. And I will say the making it part, when we say making it, we don't mean like fucking Chris Rock, Kevin Hart. We mean paying your bills and making your living only from comedy and nothing else. That's what we mean by making it.
That's what I would call this podcast if I were able to quit my day job and just be able to support myself and my family on this podcast. I'd think I'd made it as a podcaster.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not known worldwide, but maybe someday that'll come. But I always like to ask this with comics is. Has it helped your material or hurt your material? Now I'm not talking, has it helped your, you know, ability to get gigs? Obviously that's been affected and things like that. But like, has your material improved, do you think, since all this happened?
Since COVID or the podcast?
The COVID. Yeah. Just like the quarantine and not being able to physically go to gigs. Like you had more time to kind of work on your material. Do you think that's been a blessing in disguise?
So my answer is gonna be different than Kevin. I know that my answer is no. My material has gotten worse because what I did with COVID was I looked at it from a different standpoint. Like Kevin just perfectly put it, when you do, you know, with comedy, it really, it's a fucking lottery ticket. And even that lottery ticket, it may be a winning lottery ticket, maybe a few dollars.
Yeah,
it's not a fucking multi-million jackpot. So I said, I have way more control over the shows I've created as well as this podcast. And when COVID hit, don't get me wrong, I missed out on a lot of shit, fun shit, whatever. But I actually was thankful for this COVID thing to hit. Why? Because I took that time, and Kevin and I took that time, excuse me. We nailed down all the menial behind the scenes grunt work bullshit for this podcast in that time.
Yeah.
So when everyone's like, there's no comedy, there's no nothing, I go, you know what? Everyone goes, well, if I had 6 months off, we got fucking 7-8 months off. I'm a medical field rep by day. I was home, was it March 17th till day after Labor Day when I came back in the field. And I work in Manhattan. So I was out 6 months, pretty much 6 months. So what wow. I did was I said, I am going to fucking get this shit so up and running. And I dare say for a podcast that's not even up a year and a half, we are way ahead of people who have been out a year, less than a year and a half from our standpoint. So, but because of that, my material has taken a hit. I do some Zoom shows here and there. But if I'm going to make it, in quotes, for me, it is the podcast. It is the shows. It is not stand-up. Stand-up has now become secondary for me. If anything, the podcast will get me to a point where we build up a huge enough audience where we've already done one live show. We'd love to do live shows around the country where we watch films in person and do a podcast episode there. We would also love to say, fuck it. We've got a huge audience. We can rent out we can do a theater show where Kevin and I can do stand up and fucking really go double dip that way. So to answer your question, a long winded way, my material has taken a back seat to this, but the podcast has soared ahead. Because
Kevin Israel, have you also become less funny over COVID? Like,
you know what? I did as good a job as you can maintaining some kind of performance schedule during all of this. You know, I was getting up a couple times a month, but comedy is a muscle. And I mean, we're typically working out every weekend at least. And going from that to maybe once, twice a month, it atrophies and you feel it and it just, you, and even if you're writing, like I wrote stuff during COVID because you can't not like you stuff come on me posting stuff on Facebook. You couldn't not write about what was going on in your life at that time. Yeah. But the problem is there's thousands of other comics who are writing the exact same shit. We're all going through the exact same thing and experiencing all the same fucking shit. So There's literally, it's like the start of the New York Marathon. There's like thousands of comics at the gates just being like, I got to get my material out first right now. Cause if everybody's else is going to say the same thing. So it definitely didn't help stand up comedy. It didn't help my material. And because I can't get up as much. You can't practice as much. Yeah, and you know, you write something and you think it's hysterical and then you get up on stage and you say it a couple times and you're like, oof. This did not work. This is oof. And then you either find the funny in it or you just ditch it. But you've got to do a joke. You got to do a joke at least 10 times before you really know if it's funny or not, where the funny is. I mean, maybe you get lucky and everybody laughs and it works the first time. But typically it takes 10, 20 times before you really get the funny out of a joke. And now if you're only performing once or twice a month, that's a long process. Yeah. So but to Kevin's point, it gave us a lot of opportunity to grind it out on the podcast and build it up to where it is now. So that was great. But I've been getting up a little more now, and I definitely feel the rust, and it sucks. It really sucks.
Yeah, but the show is great, and Ben and I made an appearance on one of them. So I want everyone to check that out. You guys are definitely rocking a great thing. You guys have something good going for sure.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Obviously, we're going to get to the title of the episode here, but real quick, just so people who don't know, you guys are on Gutting the Sacred Cow. First of all, I'm sure you get this question all the time, where the name comes from, and then if you could just explain what the show is.
Gutting the Sacred Cow, I came up with that. It says, so the idea was this. I've done several podcasts to minimal success at best. I would say, Kevin, probably the same applies to you. And I came up with an idea for a movie podcast where we invite guests to come on to pick a film that they find overrated or hate. But here's a problem that's been done by tens of thousands of fucking podcasters where they all sit around and go, oh, Star Wars is better than Empire. No, fuck you. Empire is better than Star Wars. No, fuck you both. Jedi is better than both of them. And it's the same dumb circle jerk. So I said, no, let's do it differently, where we invite guests to pick a film they find overrated or hate. But here's the twist. You have to pick a film that meets one of these criteria: widely beloved, critically acclaimed, or financial success. Because you can't come in and dunk on Friday the 13th Part 8. We all know it sucks, besides other podcasts where you do stuff like that. It takes skill to come on and say, you know what? I got the balls to come on and say, you know what? Fuck you. Godfather 2, overrated. You know what? Ghostbusters, overrated. You know what?
No, it's not.
Schindler's List. Yeah. Schindler's List, overrated. Yes, we have someone coming to do Schindler's List in 2 weeks. Kid you not.
People, and I'm a Jew, so wow. This is
awkward. Yeah, that's going to be, wow, that should be interesting.
So the goal is to convince us, like, to have the unpopular opinion and really go in the sacred cow, being films that we all have loved or made a ton of money or won awards, to gut that sacred cow, to see who can do it and convince us. And as Kevin says many times, this podcast has ruined a lot of our films for us, because you go back and go, this person picks a film and you're like, wait, fuck you, that film's great. We rewatch it every single time and they go, oh, there are more problems with this than I remember.
Yep, that critical eye. Yeah, that's a tough one. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And it's kind of the way you see movies going forward. It's just, right.
But it's equally as fun, though, to have people on to say, you know what, this movie sucks, and we love it, and especially a few of them. We're like, no, you're a fucking moron. This film is brilliant or perfect.
Yes, definitely. Now, so again, but the name, like, what made you think of Sacred Cow?
Because no one else had it, and it's something that stands out. And if you see our logo, it's a picture of both of us cutting open a cow. Because, well, again, to really get into the nitty gritty, as you know, in India, cows are sacred. So I said, let's get something besides like movie talk or Circle Jerk with craft beers talking about films, or, you know, just shit like, I want something that's gonna
stand or Blockbuster mentality. You know,
yeah, exactly. I'm going to forget this because my ADD is a motherfucker. But definitely ask me the question you're about to ask me. I have to ask you guys this now, though. Did you guys watch the Blockbuster doc on Netflix yet?
I actually haven't, and they keep
tweeting.
Don't. It's one of the few films that are short. but drag. It's like they could have told that story in 45 minutes, but they told it in an hour and 25.
Oh, I saw you post about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's don't bother. I'm telling you, don't bother. Watch the first 45 and then tap out and go, I'm good. And you are good.
The last Blockbuster, is that what it's called?
Yep. That's it.
That sucks. That's disappointing.
Smith, I think, makes an appearance. Yeah, I think they DM'd us once about maybe doing a review on it, and I never responded. Yeah. So,
oh, you can tell them it sucks.
I could, I'd be like, nah, it sucks. Can't do it.
We can't get the Blockbuster mentality, guys. All right, fine. We'll go get Brian Posehn and Doug Benson.
So obviously, like I said, the title of the episode, we're going to be breaking down the 1991 action film Terminator 2 Judgment Day from James Cameron, starring a little guy known as Arnold Schwarzenegger. Got Linda Hamilton. I edit out all my stuttering, FYI. So
possible wise move.
I'll never do a live show ever. introducing Edward Furlong. Now, Kevin, KG,
yes,
I had emailed you a list of movies to choose from. Sometimes guests have movies off the top of their head, but you wanted a list, which a lot of guests want as well. So out of all the movies I sent you, why'd you guys pick this one?
It was between this and Aliens, so you're going to figure out real fast that I'm a Cameron guy, except for Avatar, which is on our old podcast, Gutting the Sacred Cow. No, but Terminator 2, I mean, I don't know. We can do notes. We'll just weave in and out. This film is, and Kevin and I have it also on our podcast, we talk about films that we feel are bulletproof. Goodfellas, Shawshank, Back to the Future, Empire, The Matrix. I'm throwing Terminator 2 on that list of impervious films. This film is a goddamned American classic. I can't find anyone to give anything less than a stellar review of this film. I saw it when it came out to the theater. My parents saw it first because my parents were a little bit constraints with the R ratings, and they said, "Oh, we'll see it first, and then we'll let you know if you can go see it." And it's funny, my mother goes, "They saw Silence of the Lambs." She goes, "You're not seeing that till you're 17." But Terminator 2 passed the bill. They said, "Go for it." And boy, oh boy, we also talk on the podcast films that have changed us after you walk out of them. The Matrix being the one for me. This is in my top three. Terminator 2, I walked out of and go, "Holy shit, that was a religious enlightenment." Was this film? So that is why I love Terminator 2. It is my brother's favorite film. I just bought him a framed fucking T2 poster for his man cave downstairs for one of his Christmas presents. An absolute goatee family classic, quotable from top to bottom. And I don't know how many iconic action scenes that we'll be getting into, I'm sure, later on. But
yeah,
this film is a goddamn classic, and I will stand on a hill and I will execute anyone who says otherwise.
Literally, he will execute.
Right.
Kevin Israel, did you have a say in what we were gonna do, or did KG just pick?
I have a terrible memory, so okay. I want to say that at some point he texted me and said, "Hey, here are the couple of the movies they wanted to choose from," and I think I agreed with Terminator 2. But
okay.
So it's funny that you guys did Ghostbusters, and I told a whole story about how I saw that in the movie with my sister. Like, that was the one my big sister took me to see it, and that's something that always stuck out in my head. This was one of two movies in my life my father took me to see.
Really?
What was the other one?
My Godzilla 1985.
Okay.
Ooh. That was purely like I made him take me to see that. I'm sorry. You know what? He saw Batman with me too.
Okay.
This one really stuck out because he wanted to see this movie too. And I hadn't seen it in a while. And on rewatch, I was really surprised by how much I still enjoyed the entire movie. Like, every scene in the movie has something to offer. Like, there's something memorable, something fun or cool or exciting or graphically violent, which I forgot how violent the movie is.
Yeah.
That stands out about each scene. Like, there's no dead space in this movie. It's just every scene just builds on each other and builds on each other until it gets to this great climactic fight. It's I totally, I second what Kevin said, that this is bulletproof.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously this, Dave, did you, when you found out we were doing this movie, what were your preconceived notions?
Well, I was intrigued because I didn't see this in the theater, and I think I saw the TV cut like 50 times. And I was thinking, like, how many times have I actually watched the theatrical R-rated version? And I think it's just a handful. So watching it before we, you know, we always be a good podcast host and watch the movie before we talk about it. I think this is James Cameron's best movie. I think there was certainly, you might say Aliens or something like that, but I don't think there's anything else that I would say is better. Certainly not Titanic. We can go all over that. And I actually, Kevin, I actually like Avatar, so I will admit to that. I don't know if that's going to be a slaughter.
True Lies is good, not great, but you're right. It's T2 and Aliens, and then it's a nice steep drop off.
Yeah,
but hey, at least Kevin Arnold's in it, so you know, you got that going for it, you know.
But I was excited. I haven't seen this one in a bit, but yeah, this one seems to be like the movie that was always on TV, at least to like on TNT or TBS or something like that. So I've caught like a million bits and pieces of it. To sit and actually watch the whole thing straight through the theatrical cut, it was a nice experience.
I watch a theatrical cut too. I'm sorry, the director's cut. I watch a director's cut for our podcast.
For this podcast, have you guys done this show on your done this movie on your podcast?
No one has the balls to bring it up. But no, I rewatch. Listen, you guys, let's watch. We're doing T2. Go well, it gives me excuse to watch T2 for the honest to God. I mean, it's got between 50 and 100 times for me. I've seen this so
is this
good.
Is it safe to say this is your favorite Arnold film?
It's this and Commando, and I give this. And Kevin Israel starts nodding already. He's like, "Fucking ain't right, it is." Yeah, it's these two are my two favorite. I mean, Terminator is great too. The original Terminator.
Oh yeah, Commando. We did an episode on Commando with actor Dan Franco. It was an hilarious hour and 15 minutes.
Just yeah, that's awesome.
Commando's the great. Gloriousness.
Predator is my favorite Arnold movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's Predator's up there for me. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about what we favor more, T2 or the first one, a little later on. But yeah, let's kind of get into this thing. I mean, it starts off with that classic Sarah Connor voiceover. Obviously, Linda Hamilton playing her, and we see the destruction of L.A. the skeletons all over the place, and these the Terminators from Skynet all walking around. I mean, it's just brilliant how they do it. And then you see the older John Connor kind of leading the charge, and then what gets to, I think, yeah, right away it gets to Arnold.
I have a note for you. many of them. The opening scene, I'm going to go out on the limb and say this is the third coolest laser sound effects ever.
Yeah?
Third. Yeah.
What's
number one?
Other two?
Number one.
Well, we have to know.
Actually, I'll go backwards. Number two, the Cobra lasers from the G.I. Joe cartoon.
Oh, no, okay. Hey,
number one better be what I think it is.
TIE Fighter lasers.
No. Ah, damn it.
No, what? Yeah, TIE Fighter.
Optimus
the
Prime's
answer.
Rifle.
I would say Mega. I would take Megatron's rifle over Optimus Prime.
I think Optimus Prime's rifle had a more distinct sound, and I always remembered loving the sound, and I can't picture it right in my head right now. But I remember always thinking that was what I would want a laser rifle to sound like.
I think Megatron's was more succinct and unique. But
the correct answer is TIE Fighters. So
thank you. Yes. That's why it's number one. So let's be honest.
So that is the correct answer.
The notes aren't all like that, right?
The next note is about the ginger John Connor's friend. So continue, please.
No, you continue. You're hosting the show now. What?
The ginger.
Is he from Salute Your Shorts?
Who would have thought Pete, the guy from Pete and Pete, would be in less dire straits than the guy who played John Connor?
Yeah.
The redhead was in a TV show in the 80s, though.
Yeah, I think it was Salute Your Shorts, wasn't it?
You might be right on that. I thought it was Pete and Pete, but again, I didn't do my research.
One of the gingers from Nickelodeon, you know, one of the gingers. He's in it right away. We meet John Connor, who's this foster kid, because apparently Sarah Connor is in this mental institution. He's got foster parents. She wants him to clean his room. He basically says fuck off in so many words. You know, he's totally disrespectful, and this is the guy that's going to lead the resistance in the future. You gotta start with someone who's already strong, you know. But the before that, though, is Arnold. Classic naked stance. they always perfectly, you know, put up the knee to cover the genitals.
Yeah, why are they gonna hide that?
Because nobody wants to see his little steroid-affected penis.
They don't. But I always wonder about those scenes in movies. Like it's been in several where the knee just lifts up, and yeah, I'm wondering, like, does the cameraman say like, no, and got a little ball action there. If you could just lower it a little bit.
I'd have a fair dangle. I don't know about you guys.
Well, good for you.
Yeah,
someone, geez. Congratulations.
Some humble brag, I guess.
Someone posted on Twitter the footage of him doing that scene from behind the cameras. He's wearing like a little like neon orange and green Speedo.
They typically put some kind of ball strap
jaw protector.
So if you're gifted like Dave is, it doesn't dangle below.
That was the best humble brag of Dave, and then he slings dick. Like that's cool.
If that was me, it would have been dragging on the ground. It would have taken for me to stand up. Such a problem. My dick gets wet when I pee. It's horrible. God.
You're getting asphalt burn.
I get a boner. Road rash. Nothing blood.
You've got gum on your dick again. Oh.
God damn it.
That's the show, folks. Dave's balls. It's similar, obviously, to the Terminator, the first Terminator scene. And he shows up to the bar, needs an outfit, obviously. You know, the guy he steals his outfit from, similar size, kind of shorter. All right, I guess that works.
That scene where that guy gets thrown onto the griddle. Awesome. Sticks in my head so clearly for some reason.
Yeah.
The idea of landing face first on a hot stove, and then he puts his hands like to make it worse.
Yeah.
And you go and you hear, and like I feel that scene almost more than anything that happens in this movie.
Yeah, it is rough. It is rough, that's for sure. We get all that, you know, the class instead of the late great Bill Paxton, we get just a no-named actor who he steals his uniform, I guess you could call it, from
clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
Yeah. That's right.
Did he take his underwear? That's what I want to know.
I mean, does he need? That's another thing. Maybe these they don't have genitals, so maybe he's not even covering up anything.
No, they do. I think they do, because they have to pass as humans in all shapes and forms.
Okay, there we go.
That's my guess.
KG.
You see, if you really do the zoom in on the dong, you can see some shaft, and it's quite magical.
It's kind of like Dave's, just way, way smaller.
Yeah. Well, you know, what can you do? Skynet ain't got shit on me.
Oh, my goodness.
By the way, we're not getting through this movie, so
no, we're not at all. I just want to bring out. So, what do you guys think of? Oh my goodness, I can't think of the actor's name. Robert Patrick. Robert Patrick. He plays the guy who was Arnold Schwarzenegger's essentially character in the first one, the one to go and kill Sarah Connor, and this one he's trying to kill John Connor. What are you guys' thoughts on Robert Patrick as this character?
Randomly, I actually met him. I haven't met a lot of celebrities.
Really? Ooh, this is what I like to hear.
Through some circumstance in my professional life, I got a chance to like hang out with him for a couple of days, and he's a very cool, very serious guy who is a, he's a very, he, he, he's one of those people who, like, he comes off like, oh, he's just a normal guy, and he's like, cool. But I was sort of on the set of a movie he was doing, and he turns this acting thing on, and he just becomes a completely different person. And I assume a lot of, like, real serious actors do that.
Really?
But it was just really weird to watch. And the whole time, and I didn't want to be that guy who was like, I loved you in Terminator. Like, you yeah. shaped, like, so much of my opinions of movies. And I just, I never said anything. I did manage to get a picture with him. But he,
I mean, I took a selfie and everything, but you know,
Well, and I think he might have even, he's like, hey, if you want to get a picture. And I was like, yeah, all right.
I'm glad you're the one that asked.
I thought, especially young, he had almost like an alienish look to him. Like yeah. the way his face didn't look like a real human face. So I thought it was so perfect for this part because he looked human, but like just a bit off, like just a bit like, nobody really quite looks like that, even though he does. So I thought he was just perfect for this.
Yeah, very well yeah. cast. Yeah, and I remember him from the X-Files as well, in kind of the latter years. He did okay. And then I don't know. I'm trying to place him where I saw him. He was like a grizzled guy with like a beard or something, and he did well. But yeah.
I don't know. I would go up to him if I ever saw him in public and go, "I loved you in Striptease, man. You were amazing in that film." He also was in the because I rewatched this over coronavirus. He also was in The Sopranos. Do you guys remember that?
That's what I was going to bring up too. Yeah. Go ahead, but yes.
Yeah, he was the guy who was Tony Soprano's, I guess, high school buddy. He got him into a card game. He went down 100 G's, and then they got into the sporting goods store because he had to pay him off somehow, and they got a piece of that, and they started doing shit in there, and then he got divorced, and his kids left him, and it's a sad sack story, but you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, because, I mean, he plays such a great villain in this movie. Like, he's perfectly cast. He's so menacing and everything, and then you see him in that Sopranos arc, you know, and he's just so pathetic, and, you know, he's like, come on, let me in the game, you know? He's just trying to, he's this gambler who's just a compulsive gambler and just can't stop, and yeah, he's just pathetic in The Sopranos. I mean, he does it well, obviously he plays it well, but yeah, it's just so weird seeing that comparison from this to that.
You should go up to him and go, is Wolfie really fine?
Is he really fine? Yeah, because I mean, he's this new kind of tech they have in the future where he's liquid metal. He can become other people. He can kind of shapeshift and everything, make swords out of his own hand and everything,
and take on other identities.
Yes, exactly. And so I mean, that's, you know, right away a threat.
I always felt like that came about, like this whole movie came about because some CGI tech said to James Cameron, hey, look what I can do now. Yeah. I can make this liquid turn it. And he's like, holy shit, I'm making a whole movie about this, because that's amazing. Because at the time this movie came out, that technology was mind blowing.
Absolutely.
The scene where he drips out of the, into the helicopter.
Yes.
Was like such an epic special effects scene that like lingered in everybody's, like, we'd never seen anything like that before.
And definitely.
I feel like every time James Cameron saw that being like, as it was being developed, he just blew his load in his pants. He's like,
see, oh my God. I thought the scene for him that just stood out to me was when he fucking came up from the floor in the in that mental hospital, where he just came out of nowhere and sucked up that. I was like, holy shit, man, this is, it's the fucking game changer. It's
exactly what it is. Absolutely.
So I have to say, I have to ask. To your point, Kay, I mean, this is a 1991 movie. I mean, this could have easily been a 2001 movie and looked just as good. And we talk sometimes about movies that hold up. This one holds up extremely well. It really does not look old, like, at all. But about the liquid metal stuff, I mean, I would say, just to be a little bit critical, even though I love this movie and I think it's great, I think it was a bit overused. And I think the fight scenes, like, you know, we kind of get it. And I don't know, maybe it's just for a 91 audience that's continually blown away through the whole going through the entire movie. But kind of watching it again, I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. Like, you shoot him and then he kind of separates and then he comes back together, kind of a thing. Was it overdone, or was it just right?
Oh, I definitely think he went all crazy on it, because the minute he saw that you could do this, he'd be like, we're going to put this in 18 separate action scenes. We're going to have him blown in half. We're going to have his head blown in half. We're going to have a hole blown through him. He's going to melt. He's going to freeze. He literally, they did everything with that liquid metal aspect that you possibly could. Like, they chat around at a table and we're like, what happens? Now you write it all down. We're putting it all in the movie. And you know, it did feel like a little much. And Kevin and I talk about this a lot. Like, I think now that we have like all these Marvel movies where there's so much going on and there's all these different threats and different, having a movie where it's just this one guy chasing this one group of people and they're just trying to survive almost seems like dull now, but this, you're right. This movie holds up in it, and it pulls that really kind of simple, like they're just trying to survive and keep away from this guy. Like, that's kind of the point of this movie.
See, this is like, Cameron, it's like any of us. You find an 8.5 at the bar. What do? You fuck the shit out of her for the next week and a half, 2 weeks nonstop. I mean, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that's what he did with this. But you know what? I think it worked. I had no problem with him going crazy with it. The floor, the helicopter, going through the jail bars, getting blown in half at the very end, getting blown apart and then reforming. All that shit, every single of those aspects, it fucking worked for me in spades. And it worked for me again Saturday morning when I rewatch this puppy. It's still just chef's kiss. Still fucking perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like with KGKI. There, boom, figured it out. Like KI said, it's like he just, found out about this technology, put it in the movie, and it was just like, all right, let's keep using it. So for me, it was a little overused, but again, it's still awesome. It's great. It's technology you hadn't seen before, and it's still menacing, and it's just like, okay, this guy will not go away. I feel like Austin Powers when I forget if it was the first one, but he's just like, why won't you die?
You know what it immediately made me think of in the first X-Men movie? When the congressman gets turned into a mutant or whatever, and he's standing at the bars and he slips through the bars. Oh. I remember even thinking in the theater, they did that in Terminator like 10 years
ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's I mean, you got to think that, took inspiration from that. That's for sure. Yeah. Terminator 1 ends with kind of, Linda Hamilton, on the lam, she knows this event is coming eventually after she just birthed or is, conceived John Connor, which is a great, twist in that movie. What do we think of her being now in a mental institution at the start of this movie? I mean, this is kind of not what you would expect from the last movie, because she's obviously telling government officials that these people came from the future. There's this great event, this judgment day that's going to happen in 97. What do you think of this whole mental institution thing? What do you think, KG?
I think it was a smart play because, again, when she gets rescued by the cops or whomever comes after they catch her in Cyberdyne, she's an escape mental. She's a crazy person. If someone said to you, guess what? I was visited by a guy who duped me into fucking him and convincing me as well that I am the mother of the savior of the human race. What's the first thing you would do? Throw her full of Thorazine and throw her in a fucking loony bin and just observe her. And that's it. That's the exact, there's no problem with that storyline. 100% cosign on the choice that Cameron made.
Definitely. How about you, KI?
If she wasn't in the mental institution, you would have never gotten that amazing slow face lick scene that was so incredibly necessary. That, like,
watch the director's cut, because they show more than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they show a lot of shit that gets that's weird. They also show him killing the dog Wolfie, like killing the fucking dog. He stabs the dog Wolfie. It gets cut. A lot of shit gets. They have, and then one more thing to cut too. They have another. When she's playing with John on the playground and the bomb hits on, there's that opens up and there's another one of those later on. So they repeat it. So I guess they said, we don't need two of these apocalyptic fucking scenes. So, but yeah, it's a lot of shit in the
should have paid the extra $4. Yeah, but I think I like when things happen in movies that seem like it's the way things would go in real life. Like that make right. that I hate when people, and we talk about this a lot on our podcast, I hate when people behave in movies like you not the way you would in real life. Like when you have a crazy when you go through something crazy, like you find out you have superpowers and somebody's just like, I have superpowers. And they're like, no, you don't. Like in a movie, you would be like, that's not how you would present it. You'd sit them down and be like, I'm about to show you some batshit crazy stuff. I realize it's going to blow your mind, but just be, like do something. And so the idea of her ending up in a mental institution makes complete, like that's great. Like she knows about an apocalypse caused by a AI that leads a robot army in the future. Like you're like Kev said, you're going to the crazy place and you're going to stay there for a while. But yeah. The one problem I have with it is that when she's trying to put on the front that she's sane and she's just like, I just want to see my son. And then when he says no, she snaps. I feel like the character they set her up to be wouldn't have snapped because she knows how to survive and she knows how to get her way. And she would have been like, well, fine. If you want me to wait another month, I'll wait another month to prove. Like she had the ability to wait things out and to like see. And I feel like they just needed to. They were like, we need to get this some action
so
happening.
So I'll explain yet again, from director's cut. Another cut scene. Michael Biehn was in T2. He visits her in a dream and says, they're coming for him again. You need to protect him. That's why she had the desire. Goes, I got to get out of here, which I think that's one of the things they should have kept because
they definitely should have kept that.
Yeah. Like they make out and da 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 da. Oh, they're coming for him again. You need to go get John. You need to protect him. So very, I don't know why they cut that. I thought that was very important.
Hmm. No, I could buy the attack from a cuckoo's nest perspective, which is to say, if you weren't crazy before you went in, right. You'll be crazy given a certain amount of time. I don't know if they really didn't Cameron didn't really push that too much though. So I would say what we saw, I just rationalized it, but what we saw on the screen, I'd agree with Kevin Israel. And then there is a director's cut, though I don't know. I mean, a dream, he just comes in a dream. How does that work?
Yeah, right after when she has the incident where he goes, she stabbed me in the knee with a pen. That's when she has that vision of Kyle Reese coming in, her like, on your feet, soldier. And you know, they make out, they go over, like, they're coming for him again. You need to get out of here and protect John because they're coming for him again.
So was it suggested that was actually like a message from the future?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the visions she sees of the playground and stuff, yeah. Like when she's watching that, like that's kind of how it's presented. So like, yeah. I don't know if like.
Yeah, I just assume that's just a nightmare in her own mind based on the information she had, not that she was receiving a message.
Nah, but Kyle Reese's magic sperm gave her the future.
That's
God. Hey, you didn't pick up on that?
Totally missed it.
Yeah, come on. It's in the novelization of Terminator 2. So,
but I think
guys,
before we move too far from this, I just love the sci-fi aspect of this. I love as we get to later in the film is the time travel. I think it does a good job of explaining itself. We know what happened in the first one with Arnold coming to do his job. And then it sort of explains, well, the consequence of that time travel and later on, well, he had a microchip, which then still advanced itself to Skynet. I find this really cool. And it might get confusing, especially if you see like the sequel movies. You're like, this is a Kyle Reese and that's John Connor. And I don't
fuck all those movies.
You know? Yeah, I like watching them too. And it might be a little, you know, it might feel a little jumbled or not. But I think this, I love sci-fi. And this just always in the back of my mind. It's not just, as we were saying, of the T-1000 chasing them. It's also, they have a greater purpose beyond that too. Because you know it as the audience member, is you know the consequences here. So I think it does a really, really good job of laying that. It grabs you right away, this idea of something coming from the future to try to prevent the apocalypse. And hell, oh, Skynet, man, it just feels like we're creeping closer to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this 2029 is where we saw the events or the first scene in the movie. 1997 was Judgment Day. But 2029 is when I think John Connor sends back the Terminator, the good Terminator, the good guy Arnold in this one.
And the Terminator's rolling over the skulls and all that. I found that terrifies me.
Yeah, that visual was memorable.
Yeah.
But it's funny what you say about the technology aspect of it, because so in 2029, they had the ability, or the Skynet has the ability, to make these hyper advanced robot androids that can, you know, greater than man. They can build a liquid metal being, but they couldn't have him wirelessly access computers in 19. Like, he still had to type in and be like, where could I find? Like, really? You didn't have like a little thing that pops out of your finger that goes in and be like, oh, I know where he is. Okay.
Like RoboCop?
Yeah, right, right. Exactly like that. Like, they couldn't, James Cameron could envision android cyborg murdering machines, but he couldn't think of like a better way to access a computer
because Wi-Fi wasn't a thing yet.
Right, right, right.
He was too concerned about the CGI with with that you know, the liquid character T1000. There we go. That's right. His name. So yeah, I mean, we get to, and well, and I also love the aspect of, you know, the young John Connor, you know, kind of trying to teach Arnold about feelings and things, like you can't just kill people. And then he realizes how he can actually tell him what to do, because he is John Connor, and John Connor in the future was able to tell him what to do. So I love that.
Let's talk about that for 1 second. John Connor.
Okay, you did not love it.
No. John Connor is a fuck boy. All right, now this is going to tie in a couple of my points. He calls for help, and two bodybuilder dudes come over to help him.
Yeah.
Then he calls them douches. And then as the cherry on top, he sicks Arnold on one of them. Now, we just did this film on two films on our podcast. Did he go all Allie with an eye from Karate Kid and Laurie Singer from Footloose? Did they both attend the same school of sick fantasy of getting their men in fight school? Like, all he did was like, she must have a hard on for like some Fight Club bullshit. Like, that's half the argument. The other half is this. Don't you think older John Connor would program the Terminator to listen about 80% of John's commands? Because remember, it's a whiny teenager he's dealing with, right?
Oh, what?
Like, it's like, I don't feel like breaking my mom out of a mental hospital right now. I just want to get high and play PlayStation.
Well, to defend that, I mean, if we're, you know, we go towards the end, I mean, you know, at the end when Terminator, you know, sacrifices himself, essentially, Connor's telling him not to go, but he doesn't listen to him. He says this is the only way, you know, essentially. So maybe he did say to only listen to about 80%, you know, because he's trying to stop him. He, like, he's holding him up, and then he finally says, let me go, and then he drops him, and that's when he realizes, oh, you let me go.
Because I also think part of that was supposed to be the evolution of the Terminator. Because he said, as I'm around people, I become more human, or I can learn about them.
Yeah.
And so he saw that, like, that self-sacrifice was his, almost like his step to being human. Like, that was his final action, and now he was human. Because you see, the movie's all about sacrifice. Because the scientist, who, by the way, is Cyborg's father in Justice League. So apparently he can
and
only be
the
a
police
scientist.
And no. He's also the police captain in Speed.
Oh
wow!
Yes.
Speaking of which, we were just talking about Ghostbusters. I forgot. Reginald.
Yes,
something.
I was going to say this. I was going to say what you're about to say.
But
the family matters.
Family matters.
Carl Winslow. Yeah. Reginald Vell Johnson's his name.
Not sure which episode we'll release first, but hey, we've talked with Gutting the Sacred Cow about Ghostbusters, so that's context for you.
One thing about the time travel, I'm just going to go back for 1 second.
Yeah.
This is why this film is so fucking perfect. Because they do a good enough job where any of us can explain what happens with John Connor and the Terminators and future and the Skynet.
Yeah.
The same applies for the Matrix. I can explain the Matrix to you. I can explain how it works. I can explain time travel.
Wait. Can you explain the architect?
No.
No, nobody can. I put that on my mind. The Matrix 2 is so bad.
Okay.
But and Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3, I can explain time travel and what happens with the butterfly effect that they have. But this is why Tenet and Inception both ate dick, because no one can explain Inception and no one can explain Tenet. When you do that,
not about 20 minutes or 30 minutes.
And the explanation wasn't worth the fucking payoff either. That's why films stink, and these films I mentioned are all masterpieces.
What's the explanation in T2?
Of what, how the whole the war works and what happens?
Yeah.
The explanation is, it's quite, again, we probably all said it. They go back in time to prevent the war because let's go back. Skynet is now self-aware. Skynet's going to drop a bomb to kill humanity because humanity tried to kill Skynet. Once they realized they became self-aware, the machine sent back a Terminator, which was the first one, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to kill the mother who's going to lead the resistance. And of course, the second one, when they failed, they had to go send another one back to go kill John Connor as a teenager when they failed again.
Just to follow up, paradox, which was also brought up in Tenet. The grandfather paradox, which was also brought up in Tenet. But anyways, Dave, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is there a grandfather paradox in this? I don't think so.
A little bit, because how does John Connor become who he is to send Kyle Reese back? Because Kyle Reese ends up being his biological father. So
it goes multiverse, I guess. That's the
only exactly. You could get lost in the paradox forever because the technology that kills you is based off of that technology.
Then in this, the technology that made you, that conceived you, is based off that.
I will say that this and Back to the Future, I think, were two of the first really mainstream movies that really popularized kind of time travel.
Yeah.
And then after those two movies, it just became a trope. Infinity and Avengers Endgame, which I love. I really wish they didn't go the time travel route. I wish they found some, because I just feel like time travel is just such an easy, like, we'll just go back in time.
But right. I think if you set rules and you follow them, that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, yeah, this could actually happen in the world. But within this world, it's coherent. And I think it's coherent in this world.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
And so just a quick question. So Arnold died in Terminator. So what, they found another model and sent him back? Is that... at that point was okay.
They all look like it, because remember, it was at Salvation where it's the same thing. They go get another Arnold off the line, and that's where Christian Bale.
But why couldn't they build a Terminator who didn't have an accent?
I was just gonna say,
did he have to have an Austrian accent? Was that part of the programming? Is it like Bumblebee and Transformers, who just has to not have a voice? You'd be like, ah, damn it, we can't get this glitch out of his voice of Oakleson. Why do I have to talk like this? I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, Bumblebee,
we wanted to make you a cool British guy, but this is what you sound like.
Bumblebee did speak in the Bumblebee film.
In the movie, in the Bumblebee film, yeah.
That no one cared to see. I was wondering the exact same thing. I was wondering if, because I haven't seen all the spinoffs and sequels. I've seen a couple of them. I was wondering if they explained that ever and kind of fixed that, but obviously not. So, why does he need an accent? But hey, it's Arnold, all right?
Because Arnold Schwarzenegger commands enough money that he doesn't have to learn how to speak American English.
Because did you want to turn me with a De Niro New York accent? No. It would kind of lose a little bit of it. Right. Or a Matthew McConaughey Texas drawl? No.
Or Gal Gadot?
Come with me if you want to live. All right.
Or an O.J. Simpson.
Or don't. That's cool, too.
Yeah. Or an O.J. Simpson accent. I don't know what his accent sounds like, but I know he does a lot of slashing. I don't, that's all I know he does. Yeah. Norberg, well, why is he in D.C.? Or Detroit? Well, send him a new pair of pants.
I love the juxtaposition of the future essentially creating John Connor, and then also the future essentially creating Skynet, which we get with Miles Dyson, which we find out is the one who essentially created the technology for Skynet, because he found the chip and the arm from the Terminator from the first movie, which allowed him to find the technology to create it. Again, another grandfather paradox type thing.
Well, that's what's cool, because you actually do change the world you're in. Like in Back to the Future, I guess to use that as an example, as we talked about, we don't see the after effects of Marty McFly going back. You know, maybe, you know, something else happened, but they didn't explore. But in this one, it follows up. Yes, it wasn't a clean go back, fix it, and done. No, something was left behind, which still ended up, you know, catalyzing the thing that you were trying to prevent in the first place. So it becomes that like almost never ending thing.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that there were not any after effects of Marty McFly going back to the future? How about when his old man knocked out Biff and his dad wasn't a pussy in the second half of the first film and he wasn't a nerd, a loser, and the sister.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, part two. Yeah.
And the dad. No, that was the first one. And the brother wasn't working at Burger King. He was Marty. I always wear a suit to the office. No, man, that whole thing changed when he went back to the future. And
he got the cool Toyota pickup truck.
Yeah.
Okay. Bad example. Sorry.
Another film I've seen 50 to 100 times because it's perfect.
No, you're right. Well, but it wasn't like roasted. It wasn't like but in the example for T2, sorry, yes, of course he made his life better. But it wasn't like, oh, I went back and then still, you know, no matter what I did, I still got to go back again because my dad's a loser or something like that. That was my point.
Yeah. It's the Time Machine. You guys ever see that? The Time Machine with Guy Pearce.
Which one?
Terrible.
I'll defend 2003's The Time Machine.
Not well, I bet.
No, probably not. Anyway, I'm sad I brought that up just now.
I don't remember it well enough. I just remember the ending of it is pretty bleak.
Yeah, it is. It is very bleak, and I don't know something about it. But anyway, we're talking T2
or Timeline, which was even worse than Time Machine.
Time What's Cop.
Timeline with Michael Crichton.
No, I'm saying Time Cop.
Oh, that's great.
There's Times Square. There's time. Oh, I thought we
Burger,
were
there's Burger Time, the video game from 1984.
Yep. There's Time to Kill. Yes. You know? So yeah. So the rest of the podcast, we're just going to name time phrases.
Are we going to talk about how bad Edward Furlong? Oh, sorry. Good. Say again.
No Time for Love, Dr. Jones.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Oh, very nice. So, Dave, you are not a Furlong fan, huh?
Is anyone?
Well, it's introducing him, you know? I mean, this is his first movie.
And then what?
You know?
Detroit Rock City. He was in
American History X. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In this movie, you're not a fan of him, Dave.
He has this squeak, and I don't like him. I don't like
John. John Connors. Every third sentence of his is a scream. Did he go to improv camp after Sarah Connor got locked up?
Yes, I believe he did. Yeah, I think that's in the fan fiction for the film. So,
and it's amazing that the scenes with Edward Furlong and Schwarzenegger do so well, because Furlong sucks as an actor. And Arnold is, you know, purposely more wooden than he could ever even want to be. But it still works, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I mean, I like their scenes together. I mean, him teaching him, you know, how to smile and everything. I love that scene where he actually tries to smile and it's just like this creepy, you know, just using the muscles of his mouth. It's just like, what are you doing? But it was perfect. It was perfect for that moment. But yeah, he kind of learns as he goes. And I mean, was it a good idea to turn off that switch in his processor? That kind of seemed a little dangerous to do that.
Another deleted scene from the film is when she takes the cover off, she's about to take a mallet and smash him in the fucking head to kill him because she still doesn't trust him yet.
Yep.
Another thing I think they should have kept in there just to show I'm still waffling on the fence about this fucking guy being.
And you know what? And I wish they did keep that in because that was also kind of a problem with me. Like, she spent an entire traumatic week or however long that was running from this thing, that experience impacted the entire course of her life. Yeah. And then she sees this thing and her son's just like, he's with me. And she's like, okay. And then she's like, he'd be a better father than I, you know, ever would. It's like, what? There was no getting there.
I mean, to that point, I mean, I guess for the sake of brevity, they were just like, well, if we show him with the kid, that means he hasn't killed the kid, which means she should trust him because she knows damn good and well anyone who comes into his way is dead in 5 seconds. Ask anyone who stood at Tech Noir, the club in Terminator 1.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
That's true.
I just think as like somebody who probably has PTSD because of this incredibly traumatic, I just feel like there would have been that thought of maybe I should just kill this thing would still be there.
It's a great scene. I'm very disappointed it did not make the final cut.
Yeah, so she's totally willing to to try to destroy it, which I watched the director's cut as well, KG, and I'm shocked that wasn't in the final cut, because it adds that extra, like, her not trusting this thing again, like Dave said, like you're one of you said, I don't know, I'm talking like eight people here. One of you said, she spent like a week fighting against this thing. So it's like, why would it be that easy to convince her to not destroy it? They go on from there, and that's again when he learns how to smile and everything, and they run into this guy she knew where she ended up hiding weapons and everything. Eduardo, I believe his name was.
Enrique.
I'm sorry, Enrique. Thank you. She meets up with him, gets new clothes, and she has this whole underground weapons arsenal, they get a bunch of stuff there.
One of my favorite scenes, well, not favorite scenes in the movie, but one of the most kind of subtle scenes, is when he picks up the chain gun, which, by the way, is the same gun from Predator that Jesse the Body used. And he picks it up and he looks at the camera and he smiles. Like, I know it wasn't intended that, but I feel a little part of Arnold was like, this was in another movie. I've seen this before.
Remember this, folks? You remember? she gets all these weapons, and then she has another, again, this might be in the director's cut, she has another vision when she's at that picnic table. It's like a total nuclear holocaust type thing, and she gets destroyed and gets caught him. Is that director's cut, KG?
Yeah.
Okay.
I also love that whole scene is when John goes, why Russia? Aren't they our friends now? No, John, they're not. And the Chinese, someone sends someone back in time to take out that regime, as well as that guy in North Korea while you're at it. That should be the fifth Terminator sequel, whatever we have here.
Man, so much there. So much there to pick apart.
Is there anything to pick apart with Linda Hamilton's performance? I thought she was just incredible.
I have written the following. She is the original Letty from Fast and the Furious. Like, if you have a female badass, that is who you modeled after. And I also put her as leader in the clubhouse as woman who can strike a match using only her pussy lips. That's the kind of tough broad she is.
But that is, that's very well put, very descriptive. And
he's a wordsmith.
I try.
She was absolutely shredded for this movie. I feel like she was like, I'm going to get as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger was.
Well, she's cape fearing it at the beginning. She's totally doing, in the jail, doing her pull-ups and everything, just missing the tattoos and everything.
And the laugh.
In the southern draw, the hey counselor, that's all she was missing. But in the same year, actually, 91. So
I don't know if you guys have if you're familiar with the Critical Drinker on YouTube, but he did a little lampooning of Terminator Genesis, comparing Linda Hamilton to Amelia Clark, and wow, that's quite the contrast.
She the last sequel, which was fucking awful. Linda Hamilton has not aged that well.
There's only two good Terminator films. She's got to be pushing 70 at least.
I don't know what it is about Schwarzenegger and like when they tried to franchise his movies, but like Terminator, they should have never gone beyond two. Predator, they should have never gone beyond one. Two was okay. It was bad, but
was he in two?
No. Danny Glover and Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Oh God.
and then those two franchises just keep getting worse and worse and worse with every movie. And every time the movie comes out, they're like, no, this one's gonna correct it. I swear it's gonna get better. And then it just like bleh.
Yeah, not so much. Sarah Connor decides to go off and on her own and assassinate Dyson, because he's the one who created Skynet, destroy Skynet, and hey, none of this ever happens. And accidentally,
too, which I like, good for the character. You know, he doesn't really know what he's doing, right? He's just
right. Oh. Yeah.
Working.
Yeah, he's not malicious or anything. Like,
yeah, I like that characterization.
Yeah, like shows he's a family man, and you know, saying how you know you can have pilots who won't get tired, and you know can just fly the planes and all that. So yeah, definitely a good character, innocent and everything. And then you know, Linda Hamilton realizes that as well. You know, obviously she tries to shoot him, but Arnold and
she did shoot him.
She did shoot him. I should have said try to kill him. She did not unsuccessfully. She just shot him in the arm. And yeah, they tell him the story like, hey, this is what's going to happen. This is what we need to do. And yeah, they break into the Cyberdyne Systems headquarters.
Yep.
And I like before that,
how Arnold pulled, he cuts his skin off.
I was going to get that. Yeah.
My favorite scene in the movie. Yeah, and that's that scene. It's the most real.
Yeah.
Like you building up to that. And like just the and he did such a good job reacting to it. Like I can still hear the wife being like, no, no, no. When she starts cutting it open. And then you see the arm. And that arm is so identifiable.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I mean, he's seen it, obviously. You know, they show in an earlier scene, you know, that he's there at Cyberdyne, and yeah, you see the processor, and then you see the arm. So he's like, "Oh, I know what this is."
It's funny how what saved his life was a remote control truck. And I just want to say, I miss remote control cars. How about you guys? Yeah.
They were the best,
weren't they?
I mean, they're still around, I think. But
yeah, I want one that could survive a jump off those stairs.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Speaking of trucks, I love the set piece when T-1000 is chasing them with the semi truck.
Oh my God, that's iconic, brilliant.
I mean, it's just great. And then it blows up, but then he walks through the flames. Such an iconic moment in film. But yeah, they have to go to Cyberdyne and destroy everything. They get there and have to duct tape the security guard and everything. And you know, they get to the main place where everything is, and they set up somehow. They get the detonator stuff and everything
place where they do the thing, and then we gotta shoot it.
Exactly. it's like a video game. You know, this is our next mission, and you know, this is you said
video game. T2 arcade game, fucking amazing.
Yes,
I don't remember that.
What?
Yeah, I don't think
remember. It was a game, the two guns, and it was a first person.
Oh
shooter.
Game was.
I have it on Super Nintendo, and it's fucking amazing.
Oh,
and it has voiced in there too.
Yeah,
and that was good.
Oh man,
can we just give some love to Guns N' Roses? You Could Be Mine.
Love it.
Yes.
Right.
Or we can give love to your phone call.
How dare you right now.
Hello.
We're taking calls in the air. Hello, caller. First time in a long time.
That would be amazing.
Is it Edward Furlong calling and going, stop making fun of me, you fucks?
Yeah. Hey, guys, come on.
I was going through puberty.
Will you accept a collect call from rehab?
Oh, he went to rehab? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's on the a lot. Right, and you know what? He should have went to food rehab, too, because he's the size of a fucking house. Seriously, Google him right now. He is a fat fucker.
Oh man, yeah. I was gonna look to see if he would come on tonight, but
yeah. Well, burn.
He uses phone calls up for the day in the cell block.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Let's take a look here. Yeah, not looking so hot.
Ooh. But Dyson ends up being a little bit heroic. What do we think of, you know, the cops show up at Cyberdyne and everything, and then, Furlong reminds him to don't kill anybody. So he just starts blowing up cop cars, and then just more cops come, and it's like, okay, what was the point of that?
I was thinking that too, because I was like, I guess maybe his aim is so good that he knows where to put those bullets, but it's a fucking Gatling gun.
Yeah.
Actually, they call it it's a damn minigun. Like, how can you call it a minigun when it's the size of a Shetland pony? I mean, hey. By the way, fun fact, another one, when the SWAT team came in and Dyson drops the bomb. Do you know who that SWAT team leader is?
Why don't you tell me?
Okay, smartass. Now I'm not going to. It is Hank from Breaking Bad, the second Schwarzenegger film he's in.
Ooh, oh, really? I did not know
in
that.
He was in Total Recall. He had the weird thing in her face. Yeah. He goes, look who's talking, Hauser, right next to the chick with the three tits. The
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's his name is Dean Moore. But you hear that go, because again, I watch it the day. I hear him go, that you can kind of sort of see through the mask a little bit. I go, that looks like fucking Hank. Fucking IMDb 2 seconds later. Yes, it is. So
wow.
That's funny because I saw Total Recall like a couple of months ago just to rewatch it for the hell of it. I'm like, that's Dean Norris. That's hilarious.
Also in Above the Law is Steven Seagal. He's one of the bad guys. Oh, no, Hard to Kill. Sorry.
Oh, Hard to Kill. Okay.
Yeah, we should do a Steven Seagal movie.
A little bit. I mean, then you got the, you know, so yeah, Dyson kind of does the heroic thing. Like he knows, he believes what's going to happen in the future. And, you know, he even is heroic to the cops who come and try to get him because he's holding this heavy processor thing above the detonator. And he's like, I don't know how much longer I can handle it or hold it. And, you know, he does the heroic thing by letting them go. But he sacrifices himself to destroy everything in that lab, which thought was a great scene. But you get T-1000 stealing the helicopter, which was another great set piece of the helicopter chasing them in the truck, which a lot of it looked practical, like in actual effects. Like it, I believe.
Like, I think it was. I think that was all. Yeah.
Yeah. The helicopter totally looked like it was about to hit the overpass and then like flew up on, you know, right above it. Like that was, I believe that was 100% real.
One thing with the helicopter pilot, that's the last person you want to be for that one moment, because you have a choice. You were told to get out by a fucking thing that bashed his head into the windshield of the cockpit and then face certain death, or do you do what he says and then jump out 50-ish feet and land on a cop car? I think
hope for the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, what are you gonna do? You're truly fucked. Like, what do you do?
I mean, they never show what happened to him, so you know,
good.
No.
No. Paralyzed for life or just dead, you know. So
you know what's funny though? And this I thought this was kind of interesting. I feel like the Terminator, the liquid Terminator, like what was he, T-2000, whatever.
T-1000.
I feel like he wouldn't have killed as many people as he did. I feel like he was there to do a single job. He was there to kill John Connor. And he caused a lot more problems for himself with all the murdering and mayhem that he caused. I feel like they would have programmed it to be much more surgical about it.
I'm going to disagree on one point, and this is actually ties in with one of the scenes. Right when they crash that truck, the guy goes, "Hey man, are you all right?" And then he just fucking knifes him. It's just like you could have just like kind of pushed him aside. That guy wasn't stopping anybody. He was going to try to impede his progress. He just fucking knifes him, and that's
no.
It.
I know, and I get that that's how he was programmed to behave. But I feel like this brilliant artificial intelligence in the future who can see like everything and plan it out would have probably been like, I should make a more surgical mindset in this thing because he needs to get in there and kill this kid and not like make a whole thing out of it. Cause the bigger of a situation it becomes, the more difficulty he's going to have.
So he tries to do some detective work in the beginning. He wasn't going around slashing everybody. Right. I mean, he poses as a cop.
Literally, as soon as something happens, he grabs a kid and like throws him out of the way and goes
to the arcade.
Like he didn't need to do that either.
No, he didn't. I mean, I guess you just say he's just so well. We have to be afraid of this character. I guess.
Yeah. No. I get it.
But it would have been better if he. That makes more sense. Yeah, but we wouldn't have nearly the explosions in the.
No, it wouldn't have been better for the movie. The movie was great the way it was. I'm not saying James Cameron should have been.
I like how he lit up that nerd, that Louis Skolnick looking motherfucker in the hallway of the mall where he's got the Pepsi can. He's like, wait, you can't be here. That guy just stands there and goes, maybe I should probably just stop, drop, and roll. And he just gets fucking tuned right up. That's zero fucks given right there, guys.
Yeah.
So, 100%. Kevin, you think he would have been more successful if he kept a low profile and was more ninja-like?
I mean, I think so. I think it would have been a
much less interesting movie. Like if he was just hiding in the bush and Connor walked by and he was like, it was just
like James a ninja. Yeah.
All right, movie over.
And you just see Arnold walk up and there's John Connor dead and be like, I fucked up.
Sorry, gay. So yeah, I mean, the helicopter scene and everything, and then they get obviously to a steel mill, which has, you know, hot lava and everything. I mean, naturally, and T-1000 ends up driving a gas truck or whatever was in
there. It's full of refrigerant. Obviously.
Liquid nitrogen, yeah.
Liquid nitrogen. So I failed chemistry. So why does he freeze up? What makes him freeze?
Because if he was liquid metal, yeah, and that liquid nitrogen gets to such a cold temperature that it would just start to, I mean, if you touch liquid nitrogen,
you're done. Yeah.
It would freeze zero. So it just turned him into, it basically made him solid. Yep. Like he just became a solid chunk of ice.
I'm surrounded by a bunch of nerds. I thought so. I figured I was just making sure you guys knew, and you do. So good job. Good quiz. Well done. So yeah, you get the final scene in the steel mill, the T-1000 trying to get them and them trying to get away. You get T-1000 and Arnold squaring off, and you know, it looks like T-1000 gets the best of him because he got Arnold, gets his arm like in that gear thing and it gets ripped off, and yeah, it's just a moment where you're like, oh, come on, because again, we're thinking of 1984 and Arnold was the bad guy, and now we're like, oh man, I want him to win. He gets the best of him. He quote unquote kills him by sticking a big old metal rod into him. And you know, that's it. He powers down and he's gone. He's gone. But guess what, guys?
He'll be back.
He'll be back. That's one thing before that. Yeah, when he shoots the frozen, because I like the word light nitrogen when it gets really cold. He's get the famous line, hasta la vista, baby, yeah. You know, which Furlong teaches him, John Connor, sorry, which Dave loves. Dave loves Furlong.
Love him. Well, I mean, you guys were all, I think we're all roughly the same age or generation. I mean, how much we had to suffer through countless reiterations of hasta la vista, baby, through our childhood and teenage years.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
the glaring problem I had with this film, and I called this in the theater, and I'm floored they did not implement this for T3. Is if he had to destroy everything so there would be no more Terminators at all, explain to me how they did not use his other crushed arm in those gears and use that as their escape clause.
Great
for
point.
T3.
That's a great point.
I'm sitting there, the fucking arm's in the gear. Like, what are you? There's T3. This is perfect. And then.
Yeah. Oh.
So much in the same way that they found the chip from before, they would, why not do the same thing again?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because you didn't write it, KG.
Well, were they planning? Was Cameron planning three? Like
he didn't do three. It was
no, he didn't. But was he planning it to do it himself, or was that?
I mean, when it makes like $500 million in 1991, you better believe that they're
going for a
sequel. So
was his next project Titanic?
True Lies. No, True Lies.
Oh,
True Lies is 1994. Without even looking, 93 or 94, I think, or 95, 94, I think.
He doesn't even have to look.
And then Titanic was 97. I remember that because it's fucking.
Yeah. But yeah, True Lies was Avatar. Definitely 92, 93, 94, 95, or 96. So I mean, it was within that range, that's for sure.
Let's also have a moment of honesty here. You guys are fucking liars if you did not ear up a bit when he went down in the lava and gave the thumbs up.
Of course.
Yeah.
course.
Still got me on Saturday. Still got me. Like,
of course.
I mean, it's just like, oh man, he.
What if I chuckled?
Well, you're a monster. You're a monster. I'm going to call a Dyfus on you. That's what we're going to do.
You need therapy.
Chuckled. I mean, it's.
I don't know if it's because it's become a meme or not. Maybe that was it. But just kind of seeing it was like. It's just like, I can't.
The internet's ruined you.
Yeah, it has.
It's also ruined Homer Simpson going in a bush too.
That's true. Yes. He innocently was just going into that bush, and now we all make jokes about it. But you get the thumbs up thing, which is I think a sign of him that these things have artificial intelligence. They are sentient, or they can be sentient, which is a great. Thing to explore. I love that whole thing in sci-fi. I love those kind of movies.
Definitely.
Blade Runner, everything like that. So, it's very sad. And I just get choked up every time. You get to him being selfless, and it's just such a great duo of a movie. But I do want to ask you guys, I know the answer, but T1 or T2? What are you going with?
It's T2. It's not. It's close, but not. It's a respectable win. It's not a landslide. It's not a nail biter. I mean, I give T2 a 9 out of 10. I give T2 Terminator 1, Terminator 7.
Yeah,
maybe 7.5.
What about you,
I agree. I think Terminator 1 is kind of a very direct line movie. Like I said before, it's just her running from. It's just them running from the Terminator, trying to stay alive. This movie has a lot more facets in it, and there's a lot more. I think humanity in it. You see the Dyson. He sacrificed. There's a lot of theme. I started to say before. There's a lot of theme of sacrifice. He sacrifices himself when he realizes that he's. Although good intentioned, he ends up creating a monster. And then the monster that he creates indirectly ends up sacrificing itself for humans. So there's a lot more like meaning and nuance to T2 than T1. T1 is an awesome action movie. Like, it's an awesome, fun action movie. But T2 is like, it's got a lot more depth to it.
What about you, Dave?
I agree. I think T2 is a better movie. I agree with KI that, T1 is a much more straightforward movie. For me, what I like the most about T2 is this idea in my mind that our characters are fighting something to try to stop an inevitability from happening, right? We're battling against this technology, which is racing forward. It seems like in every iteration, it results in the same thing, which is, the rise of the machines and the destruction of humanity. And how do you fight that and continually fight it? And I think that's kind of always in my mind when I'm watching this movie. I start contemplating that. So I think that sort of bigger philosophical question, I guess, if you want to call it that, makes it a much deeper movie. So those are my thoughts.
Well, and there's that great scene with the Terminator and the little kids shooting at each other. And John Connor looks and goes, "We're doomed," or like this, we're bound to let this happen. And Terminator basically says something like, you insist on killing yourselves or something like that. And it's like, it's very introspective of what the movie is trying to say about humanity.
Yep, exactly. Not even, and as we said, with the Joe Morton character, not even intentionally, we're just pushing towards this thing that will inevitably lead to our destruction, and how do we fight against it?
Because it's just a couple of kids fighting guns, but like inevitably, that's essentially what we're talking about here. Right. You got these two kids just playing guns, but they're still trying to destroy each other in their game. It's whoever king of the hill, you know, whoever ends up on top sort of thing. So I love the themes. I wish it, you know, I always like when it dives into that kind of theme a little bit more. You know, obviously this movie's action packed and everything. Wish it would have gotten to it a little more. But yeah, I mean, T2 for me is above T1, but very close margin for me. On the show, we haven't done this in a while because usually, you know, if a guest picks a show, you know, they're always going to say, oh, 5 and 5. But I think you guys will be more, a little bit more honest. We grade movies on two aspects, stars and buckets of popcorn. So stars is like it's cinematic value, like your Godfathers, your Citizen Kanes for some people, whereas buckets of popcorn are your, you know, your Jurassic Parks, your entertaining movie, your Jurassic Parks, your Step Brothers. Yeah.
Horrible film.
Like, yeah, exactly. So like your entertainment value.
There's something that makes you laugh or whatever.
Yeah. So Dave, why don't you kick us off with this? What would you give this movie out of 5 stars and 5 buckets of popcorn?
So a quality rating being stars, I would say this is a 4 out of 5 movie. It's really good. And like there's really not a lot wrong with this movie. It's got great themes. The actors are really good, even annoying Edward Furlong. He is annoying, but it still comes off good. Arnold's great, really good. So I'd say 4 out of 5. In terms of entertainment, I mean, other than, you know, to take myself back to 1991, the endless liquid metal splittings and reformings, it's hard to judge it, I guess, on that. But if I'm going back to 1991, this is basically a 5 bucket of popcorn movie. So I'm going to go 4 and 5. I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going to pretend that I was sitting there in 1991. I wasn't, but I'm going to pretend that I was there. So I'm going to say 4 stars and 5 buckets of popcorn. Which Kevin wants to take this first?
You go, Kevin. Israel.
I'd go 4.5 stars. I mean, this movie, cinematically, it set up an entire genre of movies that followed it and chased it for, still, or chasing it. From a special effects point of view,
yeah,
from a storytelling point of view, from an action point of view. I mean, this movie is like the grandfather of so many other movies that we've seen, so many blockbusters. Like, it's, I mean, obviously cinematic, like, if you're talking about, like, giant, like, you know, it's an action movie. It's a really good action movie that does have some deep themes, but the importance of it in the movie genre and in popcorn movies to come is indisputable. So I think it's 4.5, and popcorn wise, I think it's 5. I mean, this movie, I just watched this again. I haven't seen it recently, and I enjoyed every minute of this movie.
It grabs you right away.
Yeah. I'm going to go for the popcorn first. I mean, Kevin Israel put it so succinctly. You're right. This is the granddaddy of them all. This is the Rose Bowl of time travel films. That's not Back to the Future, where it's not, you know, Back to the Future is a nice, fun, family-ish film. This is bad shit happening nonstop. And I don't know how many other films tried replicating time travel. How many of them gotten even remotely close, especially with alternate universes? I mean, are we going to the Matrix? Can we call that one like that? That's it. Yeah. I sure shit can't think of any, and I'm willing to entertain all offers on that. So that's a 5. That's a no brainer 5. And especially for the special special effects technology, quite the opposite of Ghostbusters, mind you, callback. This revolutionized special effects. I know, just going to jag that wooden stake right through your heart, Kevin. That's a 5 for that. As for what was the first criteria was what, cultural importance?
Well, just quality, just stars, yeah. And stars in terms of cinematic quality.
Stars and cinematic quality. I mean, Schwarzenegger, that's from the mid to late 80s. I mean, fuck it, it's even the mid 90s. Who was a bigger action star than Schwarzenegger? I mean, you want to call Stallone or Van Damme or Seagal? The closest I could even think of is Stallone, and that's Demolition Man. And that's pretty much it for him. So just one film. But Schwarzenegger was the fucking undisputed king. Right off that, you have to give him 4 stars alone. Just for the gravitas and the legend and the swagger he brought to all these action films. Now, the other character is a bunch of unheards, which is fine. You don't need, you know, the Expendables in every fucking film. So I got it. You know what? I'm going to copy you. 4.5. I mean, Schwarzenegger in his prime, shit blowing up, smartly written script. What the fuck else can you ask for?
Very true.
Ben, what do you got?
Beat a dead horse, but yeah, amazing. The popcorn value is just amazing. I'll go 4.5 popcorn, and I'm going 3.5 stars just because I wanted them to, you know, be a little less action packed, a little more on the philosophical is that a word? Yeah,
I got it right.
Okay, yeah.
Edit that in post. Got it.
No, I don't edit. So no, Dave always laughs at my misinterpretations and my insecurity.
Well, snowball.
So yeah, 3.5 stars. Again, I wanted to see more of. They could have went more on, you know, what these artificial intelligence could do to us, what these machines could do to humankind in the future. But 3.5 still a good score for me, and yeah, 4.5 buckets of popcorn. You can't be bored watching this at all. So there you have it. T2 Judgment Day, joined by Kevin Israel, Kevin Goatee, by, from the guys from, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Definitely check them out. Guys, when do episodes drop? Where can they find you on social media? Give us all the deets.
Every Monday, new episodes drop. GTSC Podcast on Twitter, Gutting the Sacred Cow, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr, and TikTok. What the hell? Because you can just copy and paste from Instagram. It's pretty easy. GuttingTheSacredCow.com has everything you need to know. All the links for all the different podcast platforms you can think of. Blogs every Monday through Friday. And again, our merch store has all that and then some. And you can find me at kevingoatee.com, KevinGoatee.com, and on Twitter the same as well.
KevinIsrael.com and KevinIsrael_NJ on Twitter. And I have a comedy album out called The Struggle is Real that you can get on iTunes.
Bada bing, bada boom.
And thanks for having us, guys. This was fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for making me watch this movie again. I forgot how much I
liked
it. You're welcome. Great talking to you.
Absolute pleasure on my end.
Likewise.
There you have it. There you have it again. Judgment Day, Kevin Israel, Kevin Goatee. Make sure you're following them and listening to their podcast, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Hope you really enjoyed it and hope you enjoyed them. They're great guys and looking forward to keep in touch with them. Again, be sure you're following us on iTunes, subscribing, rating, reviewing, and all that. You can also follow us on Twitter at BlockbusterCast and Instagram at BlockbusterMentality. That's where you're going to get updates on when new shows release and everything like that. And we got more exciting guests coming up, so stay tuned. But anyways, that is it for me, for Dave, Kevin, and Kevin, I'm Ben. And as always, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys at the movies.